Welcome to Out There with TJ Ryan. It's strange. It's unusual. It's mysterious. It's out there, out there, out there, out there. And now your host, TJ Ryan.
You hear things if you pay attention in life. And a couple of years ago, I was at an outing, a golf outing. It was actually for the Delta County Cancer Alliance. And one of the guys that was there with us, he was talking about cannabis. And there was an oil that it was made. And I really didn't know that much about it. First time you hear something, you kind of scratch your head and you go, really? And he talked about how he felt it was really effective in helping people with cancer, maybe even curing, helping people, you know, especially if they'd run out of options or maybe they just wanted to try it. And so there's little we understand about cannabis and marijuana and hemp. It's been around for thousands of years. I know they've used it for a long time. So Chris Boucher is the Vice President, Product Development of CannaVest. And he's going to give us what's called Cannabis 101. He's going to educate us on cannabis. And I guess there's a lot to learn about it. How are you doing, Chris?
Oh, I'm doing great, TJ.
Thanks for contacting me. Now, where are you located?
We're located in San Diego, California.
Oh, so you get nice weather out there, enjoying the beautiful weather?
Yeah, you know, 60s, 70s today, so we're doing good. It's not too hot, not too cold.
So how long have you been with this company? How long has it been around?
This company was formed in 2012. I've been with them since the startup. We're a publicly traded company, and we pretty much invest and we operate agricultural industrial hemp fields. According to the federal government, it's industrial hemp, but we like to use the word agricultural hemp, which basically is considered 0.3% THC, meaning that that's the psychoactive ingredient that's in hemp, which basically there's not enough to get high. You could smoke a joint the size of a telephone pole and you wouldn't get high. You'd get a headache.
Really? So it does, it's not designed to where, you know, it could be used for just people hear the word marijuana or cannabis, they think automatically, well, it's somebody's just going to have, they're going to smoke that and want to eat a bag of Doritos or whatever the case. There's many, many, many uses. I know we've used it before. It was actually used as, at one time, you could almost use it like money, couldn't you, to trade?
Oh, yeah. I mean, what the founding of this country here in America, the original 13 colonies, you could pay your taxes with hemp. I mean, you got to imagine. You know, here's a great question to pose to somebody. How did Christopher Columbus cross the ocean? The Mayflower, all, for 500 years, how did these ships get across the ocean? Not with cotton sails, all with hemp cannabis sails. The word cannabis means canvas. So it was vital. It was so vital in terms of the discovery of the New World, commerce. I hate to use the word, but it was the nuclear fuel of trade and commerce worldwide for 500 years. You needed hemp sails to propel your boat, to move your merchandise, and also to build your navy to protect your harbors and your ports. So it was a strategic crop, and you could pay your taxes with hemp fiber.
Why do you think we got away from using that?
Well, in the 1920s, you know, you have to look at the 1920s and 1930s. You know, cannabis was outlawed in 1937. It's called the Marijuana Tax Act. And actually, marijuana is a racist slang word, and it means like a transvestite or Frankenstein-type person. And what happened was in the 1920s, a guy named William Randolph Hearst, he owned over 100 newspapers, and he teamed up with a guy named Harry Aslinger, who was the head of the Narcotics Bureau of the United States for over 40 years. And both these guys were renowned racists. One of them was involved in the KKK, as a matter of fact. But that being said, these guys ran front page headlines that minorities were smoking marijuana and murdering white people. This scared white America in the 20s and 30s, and they didn't know what marijuana was. And they also said that if you smoked the marijuana, you would start worshiping Satan. Okay, this is, I know it sounds like a joke, but it's a bad movie, and they actually made a bad movie called Reefer Madness.
Yeah, I saw that. I remember that.
So, yeah, it was this psychop's campaign to just destroy the image of hemp and paint this just horrible picture. And when they outlawed marijuana, they had no idea they were outlawing the medicine. They were outlawing all the economic benefits of industrial hemp. As a matter of fact, the same year they outlawed marijuana, Popular Mechanics came out with a front-page story describing how industrial hemp was the first time in America we had a billion-dollar crop. I mean, you know, hemp was used for paints, plastics. They built automobiles out of it, you know, textiles, you name it. And can you imagine if it was worth $1 billion in 1937?
Yeah.
What would it be worth today?
Holy cow. So really this was all done by the newspaper. That was a newspaper owner, you said, right? He wanted to obviously see this go away because of his competition?
Yeah, I mean, William Randolph Hearst, you know, he, like I said, he owned, you know, hundreds and hundreds of newspapers. I mean, at one point they were looking at, in 1912 or 13, they were looking at actually converting the newspaper made out of wood pulp to paper, from wood paper to hemp paper, because there was a great study. The USDA did a study on hemp in 1913, and they figured that 1 acre of hemp was equal to 4 acres of trees for paper production. So, I mean, that was an incredible study, but ended up getting, you know, kind of washed underneath the table. But it was a bad campaign, bad misinformation, and scare tactics that really changed the face of the hemp industry in America.
You know, you can look back in our history, too, and I mean, how many times has this happened where something that we were using may have been beneficial or was something that was very natural, and because people wanted to make profit and it was in competition with that, and they created a smear campaign. I mean, this has happened over and over many times from what I can see. There are things that we no longer... Just look at the natural things that are out there. And now we've been told that we can take these drugs, and if they help you, more power to you. But they generally come with side effects. And that is where we, you know, we don't realize the damage it can do. So I'm all about natural. So if that's what we're here to talk about, Chris, I am excited to do that. So what does your company do?
Our company, Cannavest Corporation, we actually are in the industrial hemp sector of the cannabis industry. So we grow the no highs, the 0.3% THC levels. We grow about 3,000 acres in Europe. And what we do is we extract the hemp CBD oil, the cannabidiol oil, out of the hemp plant, and we ship it and process it into the United States, and we sell it in all 50 states. And we make a variety of products from, you know, body care products, shampoos, lotions, creams, salves. We also make hemp CBD capsules, sprays, tinctures. And at the same time, we supply over 100 different companies with the raw material. You know, our main focus is in the supply chain. So our goal is to really kickstart the American hemp industry here in the United States by growing hemp like in places like Kentucky and Colorado, which we're doing right now.
So when you talk about this oil, what properties do this oil, I'm guessing it's used for many different things, but, you know, what I heard about when I referred to it first here, that there's this oil that's made from, I don't know if it's cannabis or marijuana, and I guess that's a slang term, but I'm just, can you explain that? Are you familiar with that at all, Chris?
Yeah, what I sometimes like to relate with our CBD oil, if anyone on your, any of your listeners saw the CNN special with Dr. Sanjay Gupta, and he had that little girl on, she was like 6 years old, and she was having seizures, and 100 a day. I mean, she was dying, and so he gave her some hemp CBD oil, non-psychoactive. She did not get high, and it stopped her seizures from like 100 a day down to 1 or 2 a week, and he actually came on CNN and he apologized to the American people that he was always against medical marijuana because of the bad science and the terrible information he read. And he actually did his own research and he found out all the medical benefits. And he said, wait a sec, this needs to be legalized. People need to have access to this because, you know, there's people that are sick and dying that need it. And so there's a variety of different hemp oils. You have your high THC cannabis oils that are actually used, and I'm not a doctor, and I always tell people to go online and do their own research, that are used, you know, to kill cancer cells. But what's more ironic, with back to the CBD, the cannabidiol, the United States government, the Health and Human Services, actually took a patent out on CBD in 2004. It's called Patent 507. Look it up. So it's crazy. The government owns the patent on it, yet it's technically sometimes illegal in some states. So we're really trying to get this thing straightened out and really get it legalized in all 50 states.
So what kind of ailments can this oil help people if you have, you know, what kind of ailments could it help you with?
Again, you know, I'm not a doctor, and it's I can't really make any claims because of the FDA, but what I can do is tell everybody go to PubMed.gov, which is the government website, and there's thousands of reports out there and research that shows that, you know, CBD shrinks tumors. It's useful in killing cancer cells. More importantly, the United States government owns the patent for a neuroprotectant. And what's a neuroprotectant? It's basically with people with brain injury, they could take this CBD oil and help repair their brain. People with Alzheimer's, you know how many people are going to come down with Alzheimer's in the next 10, 15 years? So I believe this is going to be like a vitamin C eventually. Everyone will be able to have access to this for some health benefit.
Now, is it different types of this oil for different ailments, or is it just basically one? I guess I don't understand that.
Yeah, there's several different types of oil, and what it boils down to is the ratio of THC to CBD. Those are the two main chemicals that are in hemp cannabis, okay? Where you're, let's say you're industrial hemp, that's considered 0.3% THC. You know, it's not enough to get you high. It's like a non-alcoholic beer, you know. You could, you know, smoke a joint the size of a telephone pole and get a headache. You're not going to get high.
Is that something that can be used, though, when you say industrial, is that something that can be used for, like, the oil from that to heal people with different, potentially heal people with different illnesses?
According to the research that's out there, it definitely shows that it has medical benefits for certain diseases, degenerative diseases. It all boils down to there's a system in our body, a series of receptors called the endocannabinoid system. Okay, this was discovered in 1992 by Dr. Mashulam. Dr. Mashulam is the guy who discovered THC in 1962. So 30 years later, he discovers this series of receptors in the body called the endocannabinoid system. And what is the endocannabinoid system? It helps regulate the nervous system, your appetite. It regulates your sleep, your emotions. And it's, I don't know if you ever heard of the terminology runner's high. That's how it was discovered. The endocannabinoid was discovered, your body produces a chemical called anandamide, which in Greek means bliss particle. And so your body actually produces natural cannabinoids, and our body needs them. And eventually, I like to say that in a couple years, you'll go to your doctor, and they'll check your blood pressure, they'll check your cholesterol, and they'll probably check your endocannabinoid system to see if you're phytocannabinoid deficient.
And that's how this stuff works, this oil. What is it, like, if somebody was, I mean, what are the prices if you ordered some of that? If you wanted to order, let's say you just wanted to take some as a supplement.
Yeah, it's actually a dietary supplement. That's how our oil is. You know, we do the non-psychoactive oil. The THC percentage is so low that, like I said, you'd never get high on it. It's Can be used as a topical treatment for, you know, people with eczema, psoriasis, from what the research shows, or people can just actually swallow it. We make a variety of, like I said, capsules and sprays that you can actually spray in your mouth or eat the capsule. And, you know, we like to promote it as a dietary supplement because we're not selling a medicine, because then the FDA gets involved and, you know, you have a lot of other issues.
Right.
But,
right.
You know, anyone listening to your show will gladly give free product to for them to try out, you know. They can go to the website and buy it, but, you know, we want to give it out free. That way, you know, people can try it and do their own research and, you know, see if it's really for them.
So this stuff, it's all tested, you're saying? You've tested it out?
We have one of the most rigorous testing programs. We operate a cGMP lab and processing center. So what we do is we actually test the soil we grow the plants in. We test it for heavy metals. We test the plants for pesticides, herbicides, which we don't use any. You know, that being said, you can't, it's hard to, or it's impossible to certify hemp as organic at this point in time. But so we test everything. We actually issue certificates of analysis on every batch of oil we make, just like you'd buy, you know, any other product in a health food store. We make sure it is 100% tested and certified as good practice, good manufacturing practice. And that's essential, I think, in the industry. And you're going to start seeing that more and more in the cannabis industry, because you want to know where your medicine or your supplement's coming from and how it's made. And that way, it's safe for people to use and they feel comfortable.
Now, you talked about in the past how this was a very accepted thing, till there was a campaign to change our view. And, you know, we look at, well, for example, trees being cut down, and, you know, you're saying we could use hemp to replace a lot of the paper that we manufacture in this country, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, last year alone, according to the SPIN study, which is a famous study group that looked at Americans purchasing hemp products, we purchased here in the United States $640 million. That's $640 million worth of hemp products, hemp paper, hemp shampoo, hemp protein powder. Heck, you can go to Walmart and buy hemp lotion. That $640 million in purchases, some of that money could have gone to American farmers. It all is going to foreign farmers in Canada, Europe, China, Asia. The entire world grows industrial hemp except for the United States. I mean, currently right now, Kentucky and Colorado are doing some experimental research growing techniques, which we're involved in. But we need to bring this back home. As a matter of fact, in Kentucky, I think it was Congressman Massey has said that if we grew hemp here, we could create 10 times more jobs than the XL pipeline. I mean, those are some big numbers.
Wow. Yeah, that is pretty amazing. And it's a natural thing. And the only reason we don't have it is because they've put out a campaign. Somebody's got big money that's obviously not happy with the competition, and so it's been squashed. You know, you look at, you know, I'm sure there are vehicles out there. I did a broadcast, because I do these radio broadcasts. You know, I'm on the air. We're doing a podcast here. This will be on the internet. But I do radio. I've been doing it for over 30 years. And Chris, I did what we call as a live remote, where we go to a business. And I was talking to a guy that was a car dealer. He was telling me he had a car on his lot that got 80 miles to the gallon. Now, he says, I can't sell that car. He said, because it would collapse the American industry. Now, this is several years ago. He said, and they will not allow it in this country. And so you start to realize there are things out there that, because there are those in charge with a lot of money that have been pulling and manipulating things, have kept us from receiving things that could be beneficial. And I look at this and we live up in an area, I live in Upper Michigan. That's where this show is coming from. And up here, the logging industry is very big because we have paper mills. But those paper mills could actually probably switch over to hemp mills, couldn't they?
Oh, easily, you know, just retrofitting some of the equipment. And I think that's going to happen here in the future, because, you know, that whole industry is, you know, it's falling apart. I mean, how long can we keep, you know, cutting down our forests to supply paper that, you know, we're using? And I think there's alternatives. You know, some people are just stuck on that commodity. We have to use paper. But I think as we're more educated and we're coming into this 21st century, that I think it's more logical that people are going to decide, wait a sec, why am I cutting down this forest so I can read a newspaper or, you know, put it in a textbook when we can use hemp, we could use rice, we could use many a different paper products that are not from virgin wood forests.
So let me ask you this. Now, what is it in the hemp that makes it so universal, that it can be used in so many different ways? Why is this product so unique compared to something else?
Okay, it's the only plant we know of that is this versatile. Here you have a plant that you can make plastics, paints, fuels, textiles, you name it, automobiles. We're talking 25,000 different products. That's why in 1937, Popular Mechanics called it the first billion-dollar crop. And that being said, you know, we're going back to an agricultural-based economy, I think, because of the environmental factors. And that was the big shift in the 1920s and 30s. We were converting from an agricultural carbohydrate-based economy. All your plastics, all your paints and textiles were all made from ag-based products. We converted over to a petroleum-based industry. And, you know, your nylons and your pharmaceuticals and your oils, okay? Now we're discovering, wait a sec, you know, this has caused damage to our planet, our water supply. You know, I'm not saying oil is bad or anything, but we need an alternative. And I think, you know, this is a choice that we do have. And this plant, you know, where a farmer could grow all these different types of commodities and the money the farmer could get, we could put, you know, the money back in the farmer's pocket. And I call it the trickle-up economy, you know, invest in these rural communities where, you know, agriculture is the only crop they have or the only commodity they have, and, you know, build the factories, build the mills, and put people back to work in these remote areas that can really benefit from this crop.
Chris, do you really see that movement is moving forward? Because I got to imagine, if you start talking about competing with the oil industry and several other things, you're going to get squashed. It's going to be difficult to move that through, isn't it?
In some areas, but now it's become a marketing game. So, you know, if you can market this product and create sales, these companies, that's, you know, where they're going to, I think, invest their money and what's going to sell the best, you know. If somebody realizes, wow, if I buy this product, is it going to help save the environment? If I buy this product, is it going to help create a job in America? You know, issues like this are becoming more conscious. And to Americans, I think maybe 60, 70 years ago, we didn't think like that. But now I think with the internet out there and all that information that's available, you know, people can make a conscious decision when it comes time for them to spend their money and make a choice.
I don't know if we really covered this or not, but what is the difference between hemp and marijuana? How do you know, because people will think they're really one and the same, but they're not, are they?
According to the federal government, the Farm Bill of 2014 distinguished hemp, industrial hemp, as being 0.3% THC. The THC is below 1%. Like I said, you know, you'd have to smoke a joint the size of a telephone pole to get high. Non-psychoactive, just like I said, non-alcoholic beer. Where your marijuana would be anywhere from 10 to, say, 25% THC in terms of its psychoactive ingredient. And most of all is when you drive by a marijuana field or a hemp field, the big difference is when you grow hemp, it looks like bamboo. You plant it maybe 2-3 inches apart, so there's no branches. It goes straight up, where marijuana, medical marijuana, it almost looks like Christmas trees. You know, you plant one plant and there's nothing around it for 10 or 15 feet. So there is quite a different in visual effect, too.
Well, they have the big green leafy plants. Do both of them have that? Then the hemp as well?
Well, the hemp, no. The hemp, actually, when you grow it 2 to 3 inches apart, it doesn't branch out. It grows straight up like a piece of bamboo. Mm. And on top is where your bud and flower is. So basically you have, let's say if it grows 10 feet tall, you know, 8 feet of that is just straight sticks. and that's long sticks or stalks. That's where you get the fiber to make textiles or, cellulose for plastics and stuff like that. So there's value in both the stalk and the flower. Because if you grow it like a Christmas tree and there's a bunch of branches around, the fiber's not as valuable. So you really have to watch out how you grow it.
Mm. But you're now, what separates the difference between these two? Are these two different plants altogether then?
No, it's the same species. It's just the way they've been bred. You know, it's okay. Like, people can breed, let's say, roses. Some roses are red, some are yellow. Well, with cannabis, you know, some are high in THC and some are low in THC. And that's what they've done is they've bred the THC, the psychoactive ingredient, out of industrial hemp. A matter of fact, for the last 40 years, marijuana growers bred the CBD out of marijuana because the CBD actually brought your high down. They didn't want the cannabidiol in marijuana because the effect it had on someone getting stoned, which in turn, you know, the higher you get, I guess the more money it's worth. So they got rid of it, and now they're finding out, wait a sec, this is more valuable than the THC, so they're slowly trying to breed it back in, but it's going to take years and years.
Now, the hemp that we're talking about on the days of Columbus and a long time ago, was that the kind that would get you stoned? Was that the kind that had the THC in it, or was it more of the industrial hemp that you're talking about?
I think it was a little bit of both. It was probably equal THC and CBD, probably a 1-to-1 ratio. I mean, we know George Washington grew hemp at his farm at Mount Vernon.
Mm-hmm.
He even wrote in his diary that he was actually upset during the season that he forgot to pull his male plants. The only reason why you would pull your male plants out of a hemp garden so they wouldn't pollinate the marijuana to turn into seed. He wanted the flower. He has made several quotes. Even Thomas Jefferson was actually a connoisseur of cannabis. He actually went to the extent of sending a secret envoy to China to smuggle cannabis indica seeds into America. And you can go and look this up online in the Smithsonian. So it was used throughout history, you know, and I think it was used as a medicine. Back then, they didn't have nightclubs and people partying, you know, and driving around in cars. You know, things were taken a little more serious. So, you know, there was no such thing as a drug. It was a medicine. When someone was sick, they didn't have the hospitals. You used whatever was available, and people were dead serious about it. It wasn't a joke or, you know, some kind of, you know, political campaign to, misinform the public.
So you're saying our forefathers weren't a bunch of stoners. Is that what you're telling me, Chris?
They used it as medicine, without a doubt. You got to imagine it was the number one prescribed medicine for over 200 years in America. So if they were sick or they needed a tincture or you name it, they went and they bought cannabis indica or cannabis hemp at the local store or they made it themselves. It was common, practical use every day. So it was just a different time and an era back then.
Yeah, different understanding. You know, I really believe we have lived on this planet and we've seen so many things come and go. And some of the ancient cultures have held on to these medicinal plants. And there's so many of them to choose from. They know, you know, the native cultures all over the world that live away from the typical, you know, industrial part of the world. They have an understanding for what roots to use, for what plants to use. It was just, you could find many of them. You still can up here where I live out in nature. We have a lot of nature around us up here. It's pretty sparse up here, Chris. I don't know. Have you ever been in this direction?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I've been up in the Grand Rapids area. Matter of fact, I was at the big Michigan Hemp Festival. We work with a few companies, Michigan Hemp Company. There's quite a few companies in Michigan that are actually producing jobs and generating revenue, paying taxes, and Michigan's a real positive hemp state and cannabis state from our business ventures there.
Well, where I live, it's in Upper Michigan, and it's really more remote, and there's not a lot of people. And it's just beautiful because we have rivers and lakes and lots of trees. And I'm sure a lot of people are growing illegal marijuana up here, but more power to them, I guess. And So I think, you know, I know people that are Native American, and we talk about the roots and things that people use and have used over many generations that have been helpful in healing people, because that's all they had at one time. They didn't have the drugs, which causes side effects. Do you know if there's any kind of side effects that when people use your cannabis oil, is there, have you heard about side effects with that?
No, there's really no side effects we've had with our hemp oil since it's non-psychoactive. Matter of fact, there was a $100,000 challenge for the last 20 years, a guy named Jack Herra. He wrote a book called The Emperor Wears No Clothes, The Hemp and Marijuana Conspiracy. Basically, that book set the stage for our conversation today for the entire hemp movement. This guy's book was the nucleus of the entire hemp marijuana movement today. This was back in the 90s, and he had a $100,000 challenge, and it was based upon a Harvard study that no one had ever overdosed and died from marijuana, and he challenged anyone to prove that someone consumed enough marijuana to die. I believe there was a thing in the 80s or 90s where they showed the monkeys dying by smoking marijuana, but they were suffocated, you know, and actually they were sued, and they, you know, were told to stop showing that commercial. This is your brain on drugs, and they showed the monkeys, I guess, with gas masks on, and they were just, you know, just pumped with, you know, tons of smoke, and they suffocated. But other than that, there's been no record of anyone really ODing and dying from cannabis. But then again, there's people that shouldn't smoke marijuana. There's people that should never drink, you know. We do know that. So that's why the education is so important. You know, going back to our textbooks in school and stop lying to our children, you know. Let them know, hey, George Washington used this. Do you know Christopher Columbus had marijuana sales on his boat? Did you know you could pay your taxes, you know? They've taken that out of our history books, you know. So what's happened is, you know, the kids grow up, and all of a sudden they say, wait a sec, I've been lied to in my history class. I've been lied to in my medical classes, you know. So I think that way these kids are educated, and then so they become teenagers, they can make a much more informed decision, you know. Because right now I believe that just say no and eliminate it and put it behind a, you know, dark curtain and don't talk about it, that doesn't work. We know that. So that being said, I think we really need to educate our youth and bring it back into the textbooks in schools.
Now, you're talking about the marijuana, but I guess my question was about the cannabis oil, which I know you said it doesn't have the THC in it, and it's used for many different things, right? Is that correct?
Yes, and you know what? Sometimes I'd like to go back. We can go way back to the Bible in Exodus, okay? There's a great section. It's, I believe it's in 30:23. I hope I'm quoting it right. And it's a famous verse in the Bible where Moses goes to the mountain and he talks to God, all right? And God tells him, hey, I want you to make the holy anointing oil. And God actually gives Moses the ingredients. He says, you know, use 500 shekels of cannabism, which is cannabis, 500 shekels of frankincense and myrrh, you know. So it's in the Bible, and it was written down by the scribes, you know, thousands of years ago. All rabbis for 2,000 years had holy anointing oil on them, even Jesus. And we can read about that. And now, is this true or not? Was that just a make-believe story in the Bible? You know, I asked all my Christian friends, you know, please, or my Jewish friends, you know, can you please tell me about this? And, you know, we've gone all the way back to Israel and the University of Haifa to ask them to explain this. And, yes, it was cannabis, okay? So it's been used, this oil, for thousands of years.
Right. And I guess my question was that the oil that your company makes, which doesn't have the THC, has a very low part of THC in it. Has there been any side effects that you know from that oil itself that people use for many different things?
No side effects we've had from our oil whatsoever. Some people that eat it might not like the taste. When you take the pure oil, it has a little, like, almost like a pepper, actually CBD cannabidiol. The molecular structure is very similar to a pepper. So when you eat the oil, you get a little tingling in your throat, like almost like you're eating a hot pepper, but not as intense. I would say a low to medium level pepper. That's probably the biggest, you know, issue people have had. Said, oh, you know, I don't like it. It tastes too natural. You know, when something's natural, it might not be flavored, you know. So what we do is we actually have products that we flavored with, you know, peppermint and vanilla. That way it makes it taste a little bit better. But pretty much we haven't had any allergic reactions. We haven't had anyone with any side effects. And again, I'm not a doctor, and you know, I definitely always tell people to do their research. Go online, look up CBD cannabidiol hemp, and cross-reference it with whatever ailment you have. Read that research, and then come back and make that decision when you go to buy our product. Or if you call our company, we'll give it to you for free if they say they listen to your show. TJ.
Sure. Well, if they, you know, if it's something worth trying, especially if it's something you can use topical, if you're worried about, well, I don't know if I want to ingest this, you can try it topical and see, you know, like you said, it helps eczema was one of the things you mentioned. What are some of the, I mean, do you have a list of all the things that this can do?
Yeah. If you go to our website, cannabis.com, you can actually see there's a lot of links and references. More important, you can actually go to PubMed.gov, which is the government website that has hundreds, if not thousands, of research studies that describe all the different ailments. You know, I always tell people go to Google and look up, like, cannabidiol CBD psoriasis or hemp CBD marijuana tumors. You know, you could cross-reference it, or MS, even people with Crohn's disease, you know, people with irritable bowel syndrome, you know. Mm. And just you name the ailment, there's been certain studies done. And again, you know, there's not enough research out there in humans because it's all in Schedule One and it's a little more difficult. But with the hemp oil and the CBD oil, you'll find a lot more important studies, considering that the government owns the patent on it.
Well, I think you've covered most of the questions I had. Is there anything else you want to add to this at all? Chris.
Can I give out my toll-free number?
Absolutely.
If people want to give free samples out, well, actually $50 worth of free samples, they can try it out. Call 855-758-7223. Again, that's 855-758-7223. And it's free, $50 worth of samples. You can actually go to our website and purchase it and buy it, but you know, do your research and really come back and get some free product from us and try it out.
I thank you for talking to me. Your company is Cannavest, and your website, again, is what?
Cannavest.com. That's C-A-N-N-A-V as in victory, E-S-T. That's Cannavest.com, and you'll see all the different products, all the information, the studies, the certificate of analysis, everything that you really want to know about is on there.
Thank you very much, Chris.
Thanks, TJ. Great to be on your show.